Good afternoon. My name is Greg Frank. I'm the hearings officer. We're hearing the case this afternoon. It's case number LU18174083CU. That number is important for a couple reasons which I will talk about shortly. But rather than having you worry about memorizing the number that I just gave you, there are some staff reports on the table by the door where you walked in. And one of the very first things on that staff report is that number. Okay? So that's important. My name is Greg Frank. I'm a hearings officer. I've been a hearings officer for the City of Portland for a long time. Done a fair number of land use cases, and with the exception of one person, which I recognize the name from the staff report, which is Ms. Frantz, I don't know if I've worked with anybody other than staff, and I had the staff a couple weeks ago in a case, as I recall. I do not know Ms. Frantz well enough to say that I have a conflict or a bias with respect to her. And I certainly don't know the staff member for the Bureau of Development Services well enough to say I have a conflict or a bias. I'm going to declare that I do not have any bias. I do not have any conflicts. I don't know anybody else in the room, so it's difficult to have a conflict or bias with you folks. It seems to me, but it's only a product of age, perhaps, that I have had a case involving this particular piece of property that's been an awful long time ago. And I don't remember, I've had probably 600 to 700 land use cases in my career, and I don't remember it as standing out as one way or the other. So I'm going to declare that I don't have any conflicts or biases in this case, and unless I hear from somebody right now, and this is the only time you get to talk from the audience, is there anybody who objects that I hear this case? All right, then we're going to proceed. I'm going to speak for probably 5 to 10 minutes, and I want to the reason that I speak at the start of the hearing is to make sure you understand, kind of the process that we're here for. As I indicated, most of you probably don't come to land use hearings very often, or I would see you on a regular basis. And I'm assuming that your knowledge and expertise in land use is somewhat limited. That doesn't mean you don't know what you're talking about. It just means it's somewhat limited. And I want you to understand what happens here at the City of Portland and how we're going to proceed with this hearing. All right. So, once again, if you don't have a staff report, please pick one up. If we run out, we'll make copies. It is an important document for you to have. All right, after I complete my opening comments, I'm going to turn it over to the Bureau of Development Services staff representative. He is going to be using the screen to your right. For those of you who are on the door side, you're going to have sort of an oblique angle of looking at that, and if it bugs you, please feel free to get up and move. And then when the staff is done, move back if you'd like, or stay wherever you go. But the staff is going to speak immediately after I speak. I will then ask for the applicant and or the applicant's representative to come up and speak, all right? And you'll notice that I have a microphone, staff has a microphone. There are two microphones sitting directly in front of you at one of two chairs. You can pick whichever chair you want. And when you testify, you're going to be testifying from one of those microphones, all right? So you will come up, and I'll talk about that in a sec. So we've got myself, we've got the staff, we've got the applicant or applicant's representative, and then anyone in support of, in favor of, who believes that this application is a good idea, you would come up. You don't have to raise your hand. Once the applicant or applicant's representative have completed their testimony, please come up. Take a seat. If somebody's occupied a seat and you want to speak next, take the other seat, and you can be ready to testify when it's your turn. So we've got staff, we've got applicant, we've got supporters, and then anyone in opposition. I had a case recently where somebody had a real hard time understanding what opposition meant, so I am going to try to explain it better, because it was obviously my fault that I didn't explain it better. Opposition means you don't like the proposal. You have questions about the proposal. You are not sure quite what the proposal means and its impact to you. Or if you aren't a supporter, testify now, all right? So it's your opportunity during the when I say opposition, everybody else should come up. No one should be left sitting without testifying. If you're going to testify today, come up during the opposition if you're not the applicant, applicant's representative, or a supporter. After the applicant or after the opposition testimony is given, then I'm going to turn to staff for final comments, and then I'm going to turn to the applicant or applicant's representative for final rebuttal or final comments or final argument, whatever you'd like to call it. People often ask me why it is that the applicant gets to speak twice. Fair question. And it really relates to the applicant has the burden of proof, tip the teeter-totter ever so slightly, has the burden of proof to show that each and every one of the approval criteria have been satisfied. Because the applicant has that burden, state law gives them the right to go first and last. Okay? So that's what happens at the hearing as far as the order of presentation. If you're not staff, if you're not the applicant or applicant's representative, you will get to testify one and only one time. I don't put time limits on you. So if you get halfway through your, or get, you get through your testimony and go, God, I know there's something else I got to talk about, take a breath break, think about it, and don't leave that chair until you said what you want to have said. Because I am very strict about allowing people to testify twice that aren't the Bureau of staff or the applicant or applicant's representative. So take your time, tell me what you want to tell me. Everyone who testifies will be doing so at a microphone. Everyone who testifies will be giving you first name, last name, spell your last name, and give us your mailing address, okay? First name, last name, spell your last name, and give us your mailing address. Anyone who gives me that information, in other words, testifies, will be sent a copy of the decision in this case, all right? So let's assume that you don't like to talk. You're afraid to talk in public, and you simply came here to watch, all right? But you're really interested in whatever the decision might be. At the end of the hearing, come up, talk to the clerk, give your name and address, and we're more than happy to send you a copy of the decision, all right? So that is the process. People often ask, what am I supposed to testify? What is good testimony? And my response is that I make a land use decision based on evidence in the record and the relevant approval criteria. Most of you don't come to land use hearings office very often, so you're going, what is a relevant approval criteria? What am I supposed to talk about? It is the rules or the law that apply to this case. Staff, in staff's wisdom, has told you in the staff report what staff believes to be the relevant approval criteria, the relevant laws or rules. That's one of the reasons you should have a copy of that, is it actually goes through what staff believes to be the approval criteria. You have the ability to testify to three things. Number one, you disagree with the way that staff has interpreted that provision, that law, that rule, that approval criteria. Two, you think that the approval criteria that staff has picked is too, it doesn't apply. You can just tell me, that one doesn't apply. Or you can tell me that some other law, rule, approval criteria applies. So it either needs to be explained, there should be more approval criteria, in other words, more rules, or less rules. People often ask me, they say, well, how do you make your decision? I make my decision based on the evidence in the record and the approval criteria. I don't make decisions based on what I like or don't like, what I think is a good idea or a bad idea. I make my decision based on the relevant approval criteria in that case, right? So that's where you should testify. More you can direct your testimony and give me a number, it's whatever it happens to be, give me the number. Staff has listed them all by number. If you can do that, great. If not, help direct me, because you must, in your testimony, alert me with sufficient specificity, in other words, clarity, that I can figure out what you're talking about, and everyone else in the room, theoretically, who's knowledgeable, can figure out what you're talking about and respond. Okay? On the front of the staff report, there's two sentences, which I actually think are pretty darn important, and I'm going to read them to you. I don't often do that, but I'm going to read them in this case. It says, quote, "It is important to submit all evidence to the hearings officer. City Council will not accept additional evidence if there's an appeal of this proposal." All right? For those of you who like the statement, either speak now or forever hold your peace, that's what that means, all right? That's what that means. If you don't bring it up today, there's a good likelihood that City Council, if there is an appeal to City Council, and there is a right to appeal to City Council, if you appeal to City Council, you can't bring it up. The way I phrase this is you can't save the good stuff for Council. You bring it here, you let me make my decision based on all the evidence that should be in the record, all right? So yes, there is a right to appeal to City Council, but if you don't bring it up today, in some way, shape, or form, you're not gonna be able to bring it up. A couple more things and I will be done, and I'm really quiet during the hearings. Let's talk about what's in the public record. Public record at this point in time is a really skinny little green file. Okay, I don't have very much in it. I have a staff report, a notice of public hearing, a memo from the planner to my clerk, and a memo from, I hope I get this right, Adnan Kadir. It's dated August 3rd. Actually, it looks like an email. It's an exhibit. I've seen all those documents. Okay, that's all I've seen so far. You're going to have the ability to provide information by putting it into the public record in writing, by putting it into the little slot over to my right next to the screen, or my left over by the screen. Put it in there, either right before your testimony, right after your testimony, put it in there. All right, that goes into the green file. Okay, I make my decision based on what's in the green file and what's in the staff planner's file, which looks like a red file today. And the staff planner is required to give me that at the conclusion, immediate conclusion of the hearing. If I was ever given a gavel like I always wanted to have, I would drop the gavel and say the hearing's closed. No one can put any more into the public record except for that red file, that I allow him to keep it until just a second after that, all right? So if you've got something to put into the record, put it into the record before I hypothetically drop the gavel, all right? Next, if anybody that testifies today doesn't want this process to end today, in other words, you got here or you heard some testimony and you realized, oh my gosh, I have something at home that could really help, I need to submit it into the record, and remember the hearings officer said if you drop the gavel, I couldn't get it in. If anyone wishes the record to remain open, that person during their testimony simply says something similar to, I want the record to remain open. That's all. If you're anywhere close to that, I'll figure it out. And if you say that, the record is required under state law to remain open for an additional 7 days for the submission of new evidence, in other words, the thing that you forgot at home, and following that, the applicant has a 7-day right of rebuttal because they always get the last word. No new evidence, just final rebuttal. So if you ask me to keep the record open, I will. If you're going to leave early today and you don't know if somebody's asked for the record to remain open, please pick up a card, use our website, that number that's on the case number, go to the website for hearings office, go to hearing recordings, and then put that case number in, and you will be able to listen to the recording of this hearing. The recordings usually don't go online for a day or two, usually two or three, but it will go online shortly. Listen to the end of that hearing, if you would, to make sure that I haven't kept the record open and the logistics of how to get it information into the record. All right, last thing I have is I don't do site views. Some people, especially in these land use hearings, will say, I want you to go out and look at the property. You'll get a better feel for it. And you know what? I do. But I won't do it. All right? And I won't do it because the problem is that I don't just get one thing that you may have thought about. I'll get a bunch of stuff. And quite honestly, I'm required to disclose everything that I generate off that site view. My impressions, how it influenced my decision, and I won't do it. And so I'm just telling you, don't ask me to do a site view. I think there's a huge advantage to you. because my decision would be based 100% of what information is in the record of this case, either oral testimony or submitted in writing. That's where I make my decision and nowhere else. All right, I think that takes care of all the things I need to take care of. I'm going to turn it over to the Bureau of Development Services. He's going to identify himself for the record, first and last name, with a mailing address. Following his testimony, I'd ask the applicant or applicant's representative to be prepared to come forward and testify. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I am Andy Galizia. That's G-U-L-I-Z-I-A. I'm the planner with BDS for this case. Mailing address 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97201. And this is a Type 3 conditional use review for a new surface parking lot at the Imago Dei Church at 1404 Southeast Ankeny Street. So this is the site here, bound by the yellow boundary. This is in inner southeast Portland. This is Sandy Boulevard here. This is East Burnside Street here. The site occupies the entire block that's bound by Southeast Ankeny Street to the north, Southeast Ash Street to the south, Southeast 13th to the west, and Southeast 15th to the east. There are two church buildings here, and there is an existing parking lot here near the southwest corner of the site. This has 12 parking spaces, and the applicant's proposal is to create a new parking lot that would have 8 more parking spaces here toward the northeast corner of the site. This is the zoning map. The site is in the red hash marks there. It's mostly in the R1 residential zone. The part that's in the southeast corner of the site is in the R2.5 residential zone. Surrounding zoning is residential to the east and south, and commercial and employment zones to the west and north. Church is a conditional use in a residential zone such as R1 or R2.5, and that's why the conditional use review is required for the new development on the site. This is the applicant's site plan. These are the existing church buildings here. It's a bit hard to read, sorry about that. This is the existing 12-space parking lot toward the southwest corner of the site here. And this is the location of the proposed parking lot here, the 8-space parking lot in the northeast corner. There are 7 trees shown for removal on this site plan, including this one, which is in the public right-of-way. 4 of these trees are these 4, actually, are vine maples that are between 3 and 4 inches in trunk diameter. So these are shown here, but they're not technically considered trees under the city's tree code. They could be removed at any time without a permit. The other 3 are the 16-inch ash right here. This is the one in the public right-of-way. There's a 12-inch black pine tree right here. And then the largest tree to be removed is here. This is a 33-inch black pine tree. So I'm going to take you through some photographs of the site and the surrounding neighborhood, just for context. And on the right of each slide is a map with the arrow showing kind of where I was standing and where I was pointing the camera toward at the time. So this is just a view of the existing church building, viewed from the corner of 15th and Ash. This is the view of the area of the site where the parking lot would be created, the new parking lot. This is viewed from the corner of 15th and Ankeny. Parking lot would be in here. This is a kind of an inside view of the same area. You can see in the area where this is taken from. These are some of the vine maples that would be removed, and this, I think, is the larger black pine. You can just see part of the canopy there. This is a view of the other side of the street from the part of the site where the parking lot would be created. You can just see a residential neighborhood. There's a mix here of single dwelling and multi-dwelling residential buildings in this neighborhood. This is the view of the corner of 15th and Ankeny, kind of viewed from the subject site, the part of the site where the parking lot would be created. This is actually a bike boulevard here on Ankeny, so vehicle traffic is diverted at that point and bicycles can go through those barriers. This is a view of the other side of Ankeny Street, the north side of Ankeny Street, from the subject site. This is just a newer apartment building. I believe there's some commercial on the ground floor. This is a view just a little further down Ankeny Street, viewed to the west. This over here is one of the church buildings. This is a newer residential building on the other side of the street. This is a view across from the subject site across 13th and Ankeny. This is a new apartment building that's under construction. This actually is a property that was before owned by the church and was used for parking, and it's now been sold. This is a one of the church buildings on the left there. This is a view of the existing parking lot in the southwest corner of the site, right there. And this is one of the church buildings behind. This is a view of the other side of Ash Street from the subject site. Again, just for context, just a typical residential neighborhood. And I'm going to go through the approval criteria. The conditional use approval criteria for institutional uses such as churches.
Yes, ma'am? I'll have him go back shortly, okay? I'm sorry. I should appreciate you letting me know. Okay. Would you go back to the where the parking lot is on the site plan?
Sure.
All right, what we're looking at, ma'am, is a site plan. It's describe the streets on either being up, down, right, or left.
Sure. So the parking lot is accessed from Southeast 15th. So it's accessed, so the driveway into the parking lot is on the east side of the site. And there's a driveway that goes into a parking area with 8 parking spaces. They're kind of running in an east-west. The stripes between the parking spaces are kind of running in basically an east-west direction. So you drive into the parking area and you basically put your park head in. And does that help? I can probably measure that really quick or give you a...
Just approximately. I mean, is the driveway immediate or is it the end of the parking lot?
The driveway is toward the southern portion of the parking lot. I'm going to guess, because the driveway is about 20-ish feet wide, I'm going to guess, just looking at this, it's about 60 feet from the corner. Not from the curbs, though, where the corner... Probably even further than that from where the two streets, the pavements of the two streets meet. It's about 60 feet from the corner of the property that approaches that corner. A little bit south of the middle.
Okay.
It's not at the very south end, but it's a little bit south of the middle.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. So again, the conditional use approval criteria in 33.815.105. First criterion is the proportion of household living uses. This is criterion A, and this is specifically that the overall residential appearance and function of the residential area will not be significantly lessened due to the increased proportion of uses that are not in the household living category. So the household living category for purposes of this criterion just refers to residential use. In this case, the site is already developed with a non-residential use. That's of course the church. The proposal would not increase the number of non-residential uses in the area. It would not increase the intensity of the existing church use. The new parking lot is intended for the existing level of parking demand from the church. It would accommodate some of the parking on the site that's currently occurring in the street. Since the proposal does not increase the proportion of non-residential uses in the area, staff found that criterion A was met. Criterion B is about physical compatibility, and specifically that the proposal will mitigate differences in appearance and scale with adjacent residential development. This is the applicant's landscaping plan for the new parking lot. The zoning code requires a minimum 5-foot wide.
Once again, so we don't have the question and answers, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, I'd like to be respectful. Would you make sure that you're describing what it is that you're looking at, what it is that on the screen? I doubt anybody else is using the screen, so we're not going to be going through that. But with,
sure,
with you using the screen and her being visually impaired, I'm just trying to make it so that we go efficiently.
Sure, I'll be happy to. So the zoning code requires a minimum 5-foot wide perimeter landscaping buffer. And that's around the edges of the parking lot, between the parking lot and the street. And also, in addition to that, at least 45 square feet of additional landscaping in the interior side of the parking lot per parking space. So the applicant's plan shows most of this parking lot actually set back more than 5 feet from the lot lines. So there'd be more than 5 feet wide landscaping between the street lot lines and the edge of the parking lot. The only place where it's exactly 5 feet is right here. This is toward the north end of the parking lot. It's a maybe about an 8 foot wide stretch, I'm guessing. Everywhere else in the parking area is set back behind more than 5 feet of landscaping, and 5 feet's the minimum required. There's also more interior landscaping than required. That's the part of the landscaping that's not abutting the street lot line. There are two areas of the landscaping plan here. This is on the east side of the parking lot, kind of between the parking lot and the street. These are actually stormwater planters, and this would infiltrate rainwater runoff from the parking lot. One of the public comment letters in the record suggested that rainwater should be infiltrated within the parking lot, and this would. There would also be rows of evergreen shrubs and 10 new trees around the parking lot. These 10 new trees are all around, basically, mostly along the street lot lines, but some are on the interior side. And staff found, and this is, by the way, in addition to the street trees that would be retained. Most of the street trees would be retained, and those are in the public right-of-way. You can see them here. So in addition to the street trees, which are closest to the street, there'd be an additional row of trees in from the street trees on the applicant side of the lot line. Staff found that as the new trees matured over time, they would replace some of the benefits of the trees that would be removed. One of the public comment letters mentioned the need for greenery around the parking lot, and there would be a substantial amount of greenery as the trees and shrubs grow. So staff found that the landscaping area around the parking lot would create a green edge for this corner of the site and effectively mitigate for the placement of a new parking lot in the residential zone. So given the amount of screening and buffering provided in the landscaping plan, staff found that criterion B was met. Criterion C is for livability, and specifically that there would be no significant adverse impacts related to noise, glare, late night operations, odors, litter, privacy, and safety. Staff found the new parking lot would not have significant adverse impacts for any of these factors. The new parking lot would have only 8 spaces, so the number of vehicles that would be entering, exiting, or maneuvering through the parking lot at any one time would be minimal. The parking lot would be small enough that no new exterior lighting is proposed for it. It would be lit by the existing street lights and building lights. The parking lot, again, is intended for the existing church activities rather than for any new or intensified church activities. And the existing church activities are generally inside the buildings on the site, and they typically end by 10 o'clock p.m. The parking lot would be separated from the nearest neighboring properties by 60-foot wide rights-of-way. These are street rights-of-way. The Portland Bureau of Transportation, or PBOT, analyzed the proposal for any potential safety impacts on the surrounding streets, and PBOT found there would be no adverse safety impacts from the proposal. So for these reasons, staff found that criterion C was met. Criterion D is for the adequacy of public services, and specifically for the transportation system, water supply, police and fire protection, sanitary sewer capacity, and stormwater disposal. PBOT evaluated a professional transportation study submitted by the applicant, and PBOT found that the proposal met the aspects of criterion D related to the adequacy of the transportation system. One of the public comment letters in the record mentioned that the city should discourage driving to the inner city. I just want to mention that PBOT found that rather than creating additional driving trips, this new parking lot would absorb some of the existing parking demand for the church that's currently accommodated with street parking in the neighborhood. The Water Bureau, Police and Fire Bureaus, and the Bureau of Environmental Services, or BES, evaluated the proposal for adequacy of water service, police and fire protection, sanitary sewer capacity, and stormwater disposal. And none of these bureaus raised any concerns about the adequacy of these services. With regards to sanitary sewer, the parking lot would not require any new sewer connection. And with regards to stormwater, again, there would be stormwater planters adjacent to the parking lot that would absorb the runoff from it. And BES found that these stormwater planters would be sufficient for that purpose. So staff found that criterion D was met. Criterion E is about area plans, and this site is within the Buckman Neighborhood Plan. Relevant policies from the Buckman Neighborhood Plan are listed in the staff report. These deal with addressing parking problems, encouraging alternatives to automobile use, and encouraging shared use of off-street parking lots. This proposal would increase the off-street parking capacity for this site from 12 spaces to 20 spaces, thereby reducing some of the pressure on street parking in the neighborhood from the church. PBOT's analysis noted that even though the proposal wouldn't add any new trips, the church already implements measures to control the demand for vehicle trips to the church, including 4-day work weeks for all church employees and providing locker rooms with showers for bike commuters. The church also manages parking with agreements for the shared use of some of the neighborhood businesses' parking lots, and copies of these will be included in the record as Exhibit A5. For these reasons, staff found that the proposal is consistent with the Buckman Neighborhood Plan and that criterion E is met. So staff found that each of the applicable approval criteria are met for the applicant's proposal. So staff recommends approval of the conditional use review. The only recommended condition of approval is a standard condition that just requires the applicant's building permit plans for the parking lot to substantially match the plans that would be approved in this land use review if it were approved. I also want to mention just today, actually not long at all before this hearing, I noticed I had 4 emails from members of the public with comments on the proposal. These may have been sent to the hearings office too through fax or mail. I don't think so though, so just in case, I'm going to submit these with the staff file into the record today. Just in briefly perusing these, it looks like some of the concerns were about tree removal, particularly for the largest tree, that'd be the 33-inch black pine. As analyzed in the staff report, staff did find that even though that tree and others would be removed, that the applicable approval criteria would be met for the proposal overall. Another concern was about street parking, because the driveway for the new parking lot would take up potentially 2 street parking spaces that are potentially available, concurrently available to anyone. There was a concern registered about that from a couple of these folks, and also a suggestion from one of them that the church would be required to make the new parking spaces available to members of the public, maybe just at times of day when they're not needed for the church. It's entirely up to the hearings officer's discretion. I would note that staff is not aware of any condition of approval imposed like that for a private parking lot before. If there was ever a condition like that, it might be better warranted, I would think, for a situation where a development is really increasing, having a net negative impact on street parking, and this would be creating 8 new parking spaces for the loss of 2, and the church parking demand is certainly more than 8. I think you would see that in the traffic study that will be included in the record. So that concludes the staff comments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, the exhibits that you're talking about there, they don't have F numbers to them, do they?
They do not.
Okay,
no.
Then I'm going to ask, could you put those in particular over into the basket?
Certainly.
And we will be giving those exhibit numbers. This would be the time and the place for the applicant or applicant's representative. Just as a reminder, there are 2 chairs, and just as a reminder, I need your first name, last name, spell your last name, and I need a mailing address. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Renee France. My address is 111 Southwest Columbia Street, Suite 700. It's Portland, Oregon, 97201. I'm a land use attorney with the firm of Radler, White, Parks & Alexander, and I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the applicant, Imago Dei Ministries. The applicant in this case has requested a conditional use review for modest change to an existing conditional use. The subject site has provided a church use that has served the surrounding community for over 40 years. The church is requesting to add a small parking area that will include 8 vehicle spaces, as indicated by staff. The church is not proposing to add building area or changes to its operation or hours. The new parking area will provide on-street parking for church staff and visitors, and at the same time, the record shows that the additional off-street parking will help alleviate the on-street parking conditions surrounding the site for all the surrounding area. We'd like to thank staff for their work on the application, and we agree with staff's recommendation and conclusion that the application satisfies all of the applicable approval criteria. The parking lot has been carefully designed to ensure that it is physically compatible with the surrounding residential uses and the other surrounding uses. The size of the parking lot was minimized to limit the visual impact and preserve existing trees and vegetation to the greatest extent practical, while still achieving the functionality and safety of the parking area. The stormwater planters, as mentioned by staff, avoid the need for connection to the city's stormwater system. and they were placed in an area that creates additional separation between the parking area and surrounding uses. And is indicated by staff again, in most areas, the parking lot exceeds the minimum setback for landscaping of 5 feet. The landscape plan itself was designed to create an attractive space on the church campus and to minimize or eliminate visual and other impacts on surrounding uses. And again, as stated by staff, the landscaping proposed is more than the minimum required by code. In a moment, Jane Hansen, the landscape architect for the project, will provide additional details on the landscaping plan. There were several written comments related to tree removal, including some of the ones that were just submitted and I had a chance to review just before the hearing. As provided in our application materials, the tree removal satisfies the Title 11 tree preservation requirements. Specifically, it preserves 2/3 of the non-exempt trees greater than 12 inches, and therefore mitigation under Title 11, which is the city's tree code, is not required at all. Nonetheless, the applicant will be planting 9 new 2-inch caliper trees and 1 new 1.5-inch caliper tree. We'll note it's not a requirement of either the conditional use standards or of Title 11 to replace the tree removed with the same size of tree. We also agree with PBOT's conclusion that the parking lot is in conformance with the surrounding street designations and that the transportation system is capable of supporting the new parking area in addition to the existing uses in the area. Kittleson and Associates provided a transportation impact study for this project, and that was included in our application. And we note that PBOT agreed with Kittleson's on-street.
Ms. Frantz, just a second. Unless you can't hear, you're going to be waiting until your testimony. I had somebody raising their hand, and if you can't hear, just like the woman said she had difficulty with her sight, I'm going to accommodate and try to make it as easy for everybody as possible. But if not, you wait your turn. Go ahead, ma'am.
So again, we note that PBOT agreed with Kittleson's on-street parking study and the conclusion that the provision of 8 off-street parking spaces for church staff and visitors would actually improve the on-street parking condition in the vicinity of the church, despite the loss of the 2 on-street parking spaces for the driveway area. Following Ms. Hansen's testimony, Julia Kuhn of Kittleson will specifically address the on-street parking impacts and is available to answer any questions on the TIS itself. Finally, we note that several of the other written comments offer opinions on the previous parking areas available to the church. We agree with staff's conclusion that the church went through the appropriate city process for alternative development on a lot that it previously owned, and that the church's decision related to that lot and the previously approved development is not relevant to this application and is not relevant to the approval criteria for this conditional use. If there are no questions for me, we'll turn things over to Ms. Hansen.
At this time, no, and you have a right of rebuttal, which I'm assuming if there's opposition testimony, you'll use. So
we
that's probably when I'd ask the questions. Ma'am, if you identify yourself, first name, spell your last name, and give us your mailing address, please. And I apologize to Ms. Kuhn because I have met her before. She's testified in a number of cases.
Hello, I'm Jane Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N. I'm a principal with Lango Hansen Landscape Architects on 1100 Northwest Gleason Street, Portland, Oregon, 97209. Thank you, and as Renee was mentioning, the church has a number of mature trees throughout their property, 72 in total. We are taking down the 2 black pines in this particular property. They're located in the middle of the site, and it just makes it impossible to come up with any sort of a parking lot scenario in which they could be saved. Having said that, we are planting 10 new trees. This meets the city zoning code guidelines, or standards, I should say, both for quantity, size, and density. And what we've really tried to do in this planting design is make it a lush parking lot that meets the requirements of the city for screening, surrounding the parking lot with an evergreen hedge, and also using plant material that's used throughout the neighborhood so that it has both a compatibility with the neighborhood gardens and the church property as a whole for landscaping. So we've used two types of trees for the perimeter planting, magnolias and flowering pears. And we've used abelia and Oregon grape as the surrounding evergreen hedge material. And then within that, in the interior parking, we've added more specimen plant material, a mix of both native and hardy plant material that does well in the Portland area, including red currant, fragrant sarcococca, and pachysandra ground cover, as well as ferns. And then there are two stormwater planting areas that flank both sides of the driveway. Those are capturing the runoff from the pavement, as Renee mentioned. And within those planters, we have herbaceous grassy material. We're using tufted hair grass along with the native iris. So I think that, and those both meet the criteria of BES stormwater standards. So I think that this will be a lush parking lot and will contribute to the overall character of the neighborhood. And I think that we do have a excess of planting area within the interior parking so that it exceeds the requirements of the city.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Julia Kuhn. Last name is spelled K-U-H-N. I'm a senior principal with Gittleson Associates. Our mailing address, I'm sorry I have to look because we've moved in the last 6 months, is 851 Southwest 6th Avenue, Suite 600, 600 Portland, Oregon, 97204. 25 years of using the same mailing address takes a little bit of getting used to. As Mr. Frank mentioned, I have been in front of you many times. Nice to see you again. However, I think I have a lot more gray hair since probably the last time you saw me. So
yeah, I have less hair.
First of all, I just wanted to thank both PBOT and BDS staff as part of both the required scoping process that we went through on this, as well as the review of our report. Their insights were very beneficial. As noted earlier, we did provide the transportation impact analysis and parking analysis needed to support the conditional use request. Our study focused on section 33.815.105D of the zoning code. As you'll note in our study, which is dated March 16th, 2018, and in the record, we are not anticipating any changes in vehicular travel demand associated with this conditional use request, and because there is no change to either the building size and or the type or size of activities and or staff associated with the church as part of this conditional use review. Therefore, the predominance of our study addressed the on-street parking impacts associated with the provision of 8 spaces on site. As you'll note in our study, we measured parking demand on 14 blocks adjacent to the church, as well as the on-site parking lot that's provided today, the 12-space lot. We measured this parking demand during 3 different time periods to get a sense of how activities at the church, as well as daily activities, change the parking demand. We measured that one period on a Wednesday at 4 in the morning, which is typical of only residential uses using the on-street parking lot. And that's used to be prepared as a baseline condition so that we can look at the impacts associated with church activities as well as other activities. We also measured several time hours slices during the course of a typical Sunday, in which there are activities going on for the majority of the day. And then we worked with the church staff to identify which night of the week had the highest attendance at an activity that was hosted by the church, because we wanted to make sure that we were addressing all of the peak conditions when we were looking at parking. And we found that the Monday night condition has the highest typical attendance, and that's by the Young Life group that they host at that evening. What we found through our study, as just as one would note from field observations as well, each of the three days that we measured, the on-street parking is well utilized. That's also noted in the, I think, the Buckman area plans. It is a well-utilized on-street parking, much like many of the east side neighborhoods in which on-site supply is somewhat limited. What we did find is in the middle of the night, 81% of the 254 on-street parking spaces that we measured were utilized just by residents and folks parking overnight alone. None of the on-site church spaces were utilized during that overnight period. What we then compared, and you'll see this in figures 1 and 2 of our report, and we prepared those consistent with how other conditional use applications have been prepared in the past, where we showed by color gradation what the increase in parking was relative to the overnight condition. And what we found is that for the most part, the parking condition was unchanged during the peak event periods, except in the block faces directly adjacent to where the new parking is being proposed. And based on that, what we found is that by adding a net of 6 new spaces, the 8 spaces on site minus the approximately 2 spaces that would be removed associated with providing the driveway, would actually have a benefit to the overall parking system. And therefore, we concluded that that criteria was thereby met. We also concluded through looking at all of the other transportation-related criteria that are documented in our report as well as in the PBOT staff report that each of those are met by the proposed conditional use of adding 8 spaces. Any questions for me?
No. Once again, you'll have an opportunity to be part of the rebuttal if there is necessary, and I just assume leave it at that, and let's see what other testimony is going to occur. Ms. France, do you have anyone else who can be testifying on behalf of the applicant?
Yep.
Is there anyone here in support, in favor of the application? Is there anyone here wishing to testify that's in opposition? Remember, opposition is anybody other than who has already spoken. So if you want to speak, just come on up, take a seat. There's no preference, there's no, I call you and you're it. Whoever gets to the mic first wins. But you certainly can take the other chair if you'd like, ma'am. There are 2 chairs, and you can be ready to testify at the conclusion of this gentleman's. If you'll identify yourself for the record, make sure you lean into the microphone.
Hi there. My name is Neil Howard, H-O-W-A-R-D. I live on 110 Southeast 15th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214.
Spell Neil for me.
N-E-
I can spell it 2 different ways, at least.
N-E-I-L.
Thank you. I spelled it wrong. Okay. Yeah, I got it right now.
Cool.
Go ahead, sir.
One of the emails that the applicant received earlier this morning was one of my own, so most of what I will be saying is basically a review of what I already sent in. But one particular point of note, I noticed that there is talk of removing one of the 33-inch in diameter black pine, and it sounds like there has been review that the removal of that one does meet conditions set out by zoning. I had one question. I overheard one piece mentioning that the trees that are going to be planted do not necessarily have to match what will be taken out. Can that part of the zoning be elaborated further to
I'll
me?
I'll have during his final comments, I'll have him talk about that.
Okay.
Is that what your question was about earlier?
Yes.
I had a feeling that was where we were going, but
yes.
I will make sure, and sir, if you'll respond
Certainly.
To that, and if that's not if he doesn't give an adequate response, then we'll make sure somebody does, okay?
Okay. Another point of concern was the overall impact on street parking. In the traffic report makes a note that for the applicant, the overall net benefit of 6 parking spaces is a benefit on relief to on-street parking. But from what I see that only a benefit on Sundays, 1 week or 1 day of the week only. For the rest of the 6 days of the week, that is actually a net loss to all residents, particularly the residents that are on 15th Avenue, myself included. That residence, or that street, only contains three properties with a grand total of about 10 to 12 people on that whole street. This street is also vying for parking between, as noted, at least five different apartment complexes that have been built within the last year and a half. And while, yes, beneficial for the church for one day a week, I do not totally see the fairness in it being a disadvantage to the immediate residents of the street for the remainder of the week. I understand it is the church and the owner's sole right if they meet all these requirements to build said parking lot, but I would ask, or maybe have it considered, that to mitigate that, immediate residents in maybe a one block radius have some system of maybe limited use parking. It could just be overnight only. It could be certain peak hours during the day where that is very beneficial. But otherwise, I believe that about covers it.
Thank you. Excellent testimony. Give you credit. Thank you. Ma'am?
Yes, my name is Deborah Ann Byrne. Byrne is spelled B-Y-R-N-E. And I live on at 224 Southeast 15th Avenue. And I am very well acquainted with this area. I'm trying to turn up the volume on my computer so I can read my notes here a second. Okay. I have lived in the Buckton neighborhood since the mid-1970s, my home. I've been in for almost 20 years now, and I have been attending Imago Dei for about 4 years now. So I am uniquely situated to be aware of all the details of this area and the intent of this project and others as expressed within the church, and my many encounters with trying to get the church to be more responsive to the neighborhood. And I only found out about this hearing yesterday. I was only sent a hard copy letter and happened to have a reader, so I didn't know about it, and I would therefore like to request respectfully that the comment period be extended in terms of providing evidence.
So noted.
Okay. So this is extremely upsetting to me, and I read much of the staff report last night. I was unclear. I thought that was a staff report by the church. It sounds like this is by the city. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So I have an issue in several places, and of course, I don't know all the regulations that my comments will apply to, but I will do my best. The first issue I take, I have, is the comment that what happened with the parking lot on 13th is not relevant to the evaluation of this proposal. As I understand it, and maybe I'm wrong, a conditional use variance or permit, whatever you call it, is in direct response to the conditions of the neighborhood. And the previous actions that have happened with parking related church are very relevant as to why I feel that we should not be losing the two remaining parking spaces. And I would like to be able to describe that. First of all, the Imago Dei acquired this property from Foursquare Church. And they used to have a property, an enormous property, on Burnside, which was used by parking by the community. Now, when Foursquare Church sold this all their properties to Imago, they kept that and developed it at making millions of dollars, taking up parking spaces, and sold the church at a discount rate to the church. This is my understanding from having been part of the Imago Dei community. Now, when the 26 slots of parking were lost on 13th, Imago got $2.2 or something million, and that was a decision they made to let go of parking. And now that they have this windfill, they want to take yet another two parking spaces. I feel that they made that decision, they made that bed, Jay should stay in it, they gave it up, they made a lot of money. And I was in the church when Pastor Rick said, this is great because now we don't have to do a capital funds raising, and everybody applauded and thought it was great, with very little mention of how that affected the neighbors.
Ms. Byrne, I'm going to interrupt her. I'm okay, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I started my comments by saying that I am only allowed to make my decision based on the relevant approval criteria.
Okay.
And I am not aware of past sales as having any relevance to an approval criteria. And you may disagree with that,
okay,
I might disagree with that, but it's not appropriate for this particular case. Okay.
Well, for the record, I will disagree. And
that's
that,
fair.
That they made a conscious and deliberate choice
to
let go of their
parking.
Let's
move on to something new.
Okay, so let's go on to something new. The prayer sanctuary at the church is on the southeast corner of the property. And except for the last year, I'm probably one of the primary users of this space. As an individual, I go there to pray and meditate a lot. And there's a man who's homeless who stays lives near the door. And that's fine. I know who he is, and I have a relationship with him. And I talked to a neighbor yesterday and was informed, and I haven't had time to research this yet to verify if it's true. Perhaps in the rebuttal they can comment to this, that Imago has made an announcement that they want to be one of the churches who uses their parking lot for a homeless encampment. Now,
okay, hold up. I'm not really trying to be disrespectful.
Well, this will make sense when I tell you that.
It's not. I'm telling you, you need to get me back to the approval criteria.
Okay, C.1.
Please do not interrupt me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right.
That was not my intent.
Okay, I understand. I'm telling you that, and I told you to start with, I didn't expect all of you to be land use experts. But with that comment comes a responsibility on your part to when I try to redirect you politely to get me to some place that I can deal with the rules.
All right.
Then using what they may be using the parking lot for someday is, if it's not in the application right now, if it's not in the application or the regulations that we deal with right now, then I can't deal with it.
Okay.
And you know, one of the things that I'm just going to let everyone here know is whether you think, well, he's just sort of a non-elected, he just is a hearings officer person, and wait until I get to council. City council is mandated to follow the very same rules and the very same protocol that I do. In fact, I will tell you, when you go to city council, if somebody appeals my decision, you will be given, with the exception of a appellant representative, you will be given 3 minutes from start to finish for your testimony. And if your testimony isn't if you use any of that time for something that's not relevant to an approval criteria, then I think you're doing a disservice to yourself. And I don't want that. I'm trying to help you by getting you to get me to a point where I can say, oh, I'm looking at the rule and it says this and she said that, and I can put those two things together. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's look at C and livability. Okay, so here in your staff report.
In staff report, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go by my notes rather slowly. That it's noise, glare from lights, late night operations, new church. I think there's also something about litter and odors. I in no way mean to be disrespectful to this process.
I apologize. I don't mean to indicate that. I'm trying to help you stay on point.
Okay, so this is a point, and my problem is, and what I want on the record, because understand with me, I'm a layperson, and I'm being told I have to present evidence now. So what I want to say now is that these determinations are based that these that it's still going to be complying with this based on it being a parking lot. But what I'm not hearing being presented is that this space is already being used by homeless people as a living place. And you're describing creating a green screen 3 to 4 inches high that will obstruct the view of the parking lot in an area where there are already homeless people living. So how have the police been asked as they patrol our neighborhood and they can't see what's going on in the parking lot? They have to go in with their car in what could potentially be an ambush situation? I think that the church has not been forthcoming, and that notices should be given on what the real use of this parking lot is. That's why my segue into the homeless people was presented.
So noted.
And so they say, the church says they're not going to be a new church activity. Well, if there's an encampment there, that is a new church activity. The other thing I'm going to raise issue with is this study that was done. My mouth is completely dry now. I'm needless to say very upset. Because I don't think, and I'll just say this briefly, that that's a reliable study. A 3-day study that's focusing on church use. And as the other gentleman said, the bigger issue is not church use. It's daytime use when the church is there. I am blind. I have a spinal cord injury that limits the use of my hands. I have chronic fatigue. My baby sister, who has a walking disability for years, has come and provided me in home care. And now she can't, because she can't find a parking space within 5 blocks of my house. Okay, that's not happening when the church is in session. I know better than to invite someone over there. So now we're being losing 2 spots that they made a decision to give up their parking for money. And I can't get in home care. That's outrageous. So, I would challenge whether or not this study that was done about parking use is relevant, because it's skewed to when the church is in session and the bigger issue is when they're not in session. It's not a reliable study, and I don't think it would hold up as a scientific document. That's what I have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Byrne. I appreciate your testimony. Ma'am?
I'm Carla Zimmerman, Z-I-M-M-E-R-M-A-N.
How do you spell Carla? Because I could spell it 2 different ways.
What?
I could spell Carla with a C or a
yes,
K.
Oh, yes, actually, I always start my name with K-A-R-L-A. I always just spell, because invariably, everybody gets it wrong.
Well, I would have, so.
Yes, thank you. Okay.
Go ahead, ma'am.
I live at 1716 Southeast Ash Street, Portland, Oregon. So I'm just some blocks down. I walk the dogs a lot, and I go by the church on purpose because of the way it looks right now. The building itself is not friendly to the neighborhood. It's got a lot of walls. And there's only 2 sets of doors. The one in the center front is welcoming. The one in the back that she talked about is not. The windows are covered in drapes. So and the venting is on street side. So there's all kinds of things about the building that's not friendly. There is a tremendous amount of landscaping which mitigates that, and I'm very appreciative of it. I would suggest they put trees on Ankeny. I don't know if there's room, but it's just like the buildings are lot line to lot line, and this is happening not just at the church, but in the neighborhood. And green stuff is getting less and less. There's just not even room. So This is expensive parking to put in, and the way it's designed, there's almost more space for the cars to move in it because there's the backouts than there is for parking. So it's like maybe the design could be more efficient. It won't put a dent in the Sunday parking issue. I live on the backside of Buckman, and this church uses the parking lot, and it can be just full. You know, so they're like three lines of cars, maybe 20 to each line. So I have seen the parking lot full. So the eight spaces created are not going to help that issue. And I admire the way they've worked with the neighborhood to and businesses and the school to allow for parking. So the parking space itself, the tree, one is a black pine, and it's very large, and you're not going to replace that in the rest of my lifetime. I'm 70. The ash tree on the tree, there's lots of ash trees. I have two in my front yard. I have two elms in my backyard. The other tree is not a black pine, it's a fir. It has a different growth habit, and perhaps if they, on the space, you know where they have the spaces, if they put them closer together, they might move, make room for that fir to remain. So that's a, you know, might be a possibility. If you take out the black pine, is there a way to enter the parking lot on Ankeny and exit on 15th and have all the parking spots in one direction, so you may in fact get more than eight, but you could still save the tree, the fir tree. I really would like to save the black pine as well. On Monday night, if youth come, that's not a good place for the youth to park. It's on the back side of the church. They're going to have to walk a ways. So it's like, they shouldn't be there. Maybe on the other side, just closer to where they're going to be. The diversion on 15th and Ankeny is confusing to new drivers. So it's when they say they're two-way streets all everywhere, that 15th and Ankeny is a problem. The overall thing is that this is removing trees and green space in the neighborhood, and it's significant green space in the neighborhood. And it isn't that it's just happening here; it's happening in other spaces. They're building big chunks of blocks, big chunks of buildings that go from lot line to lot line, and no room for green space. That's it.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate your testimony. Sir, identify yourself for the record, please.
Hi, my name is Christopher Wergler, W-I-R-G-L-E-R. Christopher is spelled the exact same way, C-H-R-I-S-T-O-P-H-E-R. Just wanted to start out with just stating that 3 days is by far no study. I've lived there for a year. It changes throughout seasons.
Need your address.
1459 Southeast Ankeny Street, apartment number 204, in one of those big block buildings.
Zip code?
97214.
Go ahead.
I have lived there for a year, and the seasons changed drastically with people going on vacation during the summer and people being around during the winter. Parking is always terrible, depending on what time of the day that we get there. Definitely, these two spaces being taken away is not much, but overall, throughout the week, it is quite a bit, especially since, I don't know if you're going to be answering this question later, but the handicap space on the corner, if that would be taken away, will there be handicap spots being brought into the situation? Because that would add another free space. Another question I have for Ms. Hansen is that, how old is that tree out of the spectrum of all of the trees? Is it the oldest on the property?
Okay. When they come back up, they can respond.
Yeah, that's why I was just letting her know. Okay. And just from living in the neighborhood, I have a dog. I've taken my dog, and I'm not saying that they have to provide, but they are also saying that they have to accommodate to the neighborhood. When it comes to grass for our dogs, it's one of the only spots in the entire neighborhood that has any sort of grass. And given that you're putting new vegetation in, but none of that is vegetation for just people that live around there. It's long grasses, it seems like, and bushes. And I think that's about it. That's the end of my testimony.
Appreciate your testimony, sir. Anyone else wishing to testify?
Oh, actually.
Go ahead.
Okay, one more thing, sorry.
You may.
Just by me noticing that corner where we have the blockade, cars take that corner going 25, 30 miles an hour. There is no stopping. So if you put a driveway right there, that could possibly harm the people coming in and out of that driveway, depending how fast those people are going. I've almost gotten hit multiple times. And just by looking at the parking diagram, it looks like some of these spaces, you would have to reverse all the way out. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to testify? Pro, con, on the fence, not sure where you are. Have something to say? All right. Staff may respond, and staff, if you wish to utilize any of the transportation folks, you may do that at this time as well.
Thank you. I will make a few comments. With regards to an applicant's comment about trees that are being removed not having to be replaced with the same size or in kind, that is true that the tree code does not require that a larger tree be replaced with a larger tree. The conditional use approval criteria also do not explicitly state that. Because it is a conditional use review, it's a subjective review. One of the approval criteria, criterion B about physical compatibility, is about tree removal and landscaping. So there is a nexus there to consider that. Hearings officer could consider a condition to require a larger tree or trees because the tree to be removed, one of them is a fairly large one. Staff does not recommend that. Staff does not usually propose such conditions for cases like this because the number of trees to be planted is 10, and staff found that the criterion was met just with the zoning code requirement that 10 new trees would over time create a green edge for that part of the site. And there was a question about whether the police were solicited for comments as part of this process. They were sent a copy of the proposal, a copy of the site plan and the landscaping plan. They responded with a memo that will be in the record that they did not have concerns. I don't know if to what extent they were considering the landscaping. I do want to clarify the zoning code requirements for perimeter landscaping around parking lots do not intend to create a solid green screen. The shrubs are to be 3 feet tall, and then the tree canopy, most of the trees in this case would be deciduous, so there would be views in and out. It's not an intent to create a solid green screen that you cannot see through. It's an intent to buffer and screen the view, to improve the view, not to completely block views to the parking lot and the street. There was some comments about could the parking lot be reconfigured to preserve one or more additional trees. That could be possible. I'm not saying that it's not. I want to clarify, though, that the zoning code requires parking spaces to be at least 8.5 feet wide and at least 16 feet deep. So they could not, without going back through this process from the beginning to ask for adjustments, get parking spaces that are smaller than that. The drive aisle behind the parking spaces also has to be at least 20 feet wide. And the intent of that requirement is actually so that people don't back out onto the street from the parking lot, that it's to be sufficient so someone can back out of the parking space and exit the site on a forward motion onto the street. There was a question. I'm going to look over at Bob and Peabot here and see if he has any information on this. There was, I believe, a street handicap parking space, and I'm not sure what the fate of that would be. Do you? You can just nod at me. Do you know? Okay, so I'm going to ask Bob to comment on this.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Haley, H-A-L-E-Y. I'm the planner with Portland Bureau of Transportation. This address here, 1900 Southwest 4th, 21942 01. For handicap spaces on the street, those are all per request. So I think if that was installed for a particular resident's request and it's going to get relocated because of a new driveway, the city will relocate it when they come in for their public works to rebuild all the corners. And for the woman who has the sight issues with her sister who has a disability with walking, if her sister qualifies for a handicapped space, the city would consider providing one in front of her house. That's free of charge. You just dial 823-SAFE, S-A-F-E, and explain your situation. You'll see if they're eligible, and the city will come out with a crew and put one. The only thing, remember, it is not a private handicap space for her exclusive use. It is available to anyone who has the handicap placard in the neighborhood. So, any other questions?
No. Thank you.
Thank you.
And nothing further from me. Thank you.
All right. Applicant's representative.
For the record, once again, Renee France on behalf of the applicant. First, I would note in terms of the comments on the traffic study that Kittleson specifically selected days of the week that would be represent the peak conditions. They also studied what the capacity was on surrounding parking on at a time period when the church was not in active use to show all facets of the parking. The study was done in late February, so it was done when school was in session. It represents a typical parking in the area. The study does show that there's adequate parking during hours outside of church hours for peak church use. Specifically, parking is 81% full in the 14 blocks adjacent to the church during those times. And this shows adequate capacity to accommodate the loss of the two spaces, which would take it to 82% full. Typically, capacity is measured as 90 to 95% full. In terms of the request by some of the neighbors to allow public parking or neighborhood parking on the church lot, the church is open, has shown to be a good neighbor, and is open to future discussions with the neighborhood about the possibility of neighborhood parking in the lot. However, to be very clear, we don't believe that that would be an appropriate condition for this conditional approval because it doesn't directly relate to the applicable approval standards, and we have demonstrated through the traffic study that there is adequate capacity for parking in the surrounding area. The proposed use through this application is for a parking lot for parking. What future policy decisions the city makes related to parking lots is unrelated to this application. Again, as noted by staff, as noted in my presentation, the parking lot itself exceeds the landscaping standards required by the code for parking lots. The site overall also exceeds the landscaping standards, so even with this parking lot, it will continue to provide green spaces for the community. In terms of the orientation of the spaces and looking at alternatives, the church studied in a number of different orientations, and the car spaces are oriented towards the building to minimize the impacts on the surrounding properties. And they did everything that they could to minimize the removal of trees. In terms of the concerns about removal of the 33-inch black pine, certainly understand the neighborhood's concerns about that. However, again, the removal meets both the conditional use standards with the replacement and the Title 11 tree preservation provisions. I will note, we don't know the exact age of that tree, but I will note it appears that many of the trees on this two-block site overall were likely planted around the same time, and there are a number of other very large trees. There is a table that is included in the landscape plan that depicts the sizes of all the trees on site. And there are a number of large trees that will remain. As discussed, there are no changes proposed to the ADA space that is on site, the existing ADA space. And in fact, on site plan C2.0, you can see that that is oriented and will remain, is designated to remain north of the driveway area. In terms of the site distance concerns, the site distances were studied by KPFF and will be satisfied. That's included in the traffic report. And as discussed by staff, the driveway width requirement is such that no cars will need to back onto the street. The parking lot is designed to allow ample backing within the parking area itself. That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
All right, let me check. No. I don't have any additional questions. You're free to stay there. I'm going to talk about the open record period.
Yeah, I was just
or you can go back and then come on back if I ask you to. It's one of the two. All right, you're done. Remember the one-time testimony. You're going to get to submit in writing whatever you wish to submit during a period of time, which I'm now going to talk about. All right. All right. Right, today is 13th. Let me tell you what the statute, I believe, says. And I can assure you that I've had a couple of hearings this morning where there was some debate over that. And I've had hearings in the past where there's debate over that. But I'm going to tell you what I believe to be the case. And I'm not sure I'm willing to waver for what I believe, but I'm flexible on timing, okay? So the statute, in my opinion, 197.777.63, I always forget what it is, M or N or something. Anyway, whatever it is, says that if requested, I am obligated to keep the record open for an additional 7 days for the submission of new evidence. Okay, and an additional 7 days for applicant's final argument. Okay, and final argument's defined, in essence, to be rebuttal, no new things. So that's what I believe to be the rule. And for years, I was stubborn as a Dickens and stayed with my 1 week open record period for the evidence and 1 week open record period for the rebuttal. There seems to be a consensus amongst most other hearings officers that they want to have more time for rebuttal or responses or all kinds of things. I don't think that's necessary. And in this particular case, I think that my preference would be to stay with the 7 days for new evidence and 7 days for rebuttal, which would mean that the record would remain open for the submission of new evidence until 4 o'clock. That's the city bewitching hour. 4 o'clock on August 20th, 2018. And that's for anyone, whether people are here or not, listening on the recording, friends that you talk about over a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. Anybody who wishes to submit anything in writing may do so until 4 o'clock on the 20th of August. All right? Then by 4 o'clock on the 27th of August, applicant has a statutory right of final rebuttal, would have the ability to submit their final rebuttal, final argument. Applicant does not have the ability to submit any new evidence during that time period. The only new evidence is when everybody gets the new evidence, okay? So that's my proposal. So I'm going to look to staff. Any problems with that, staff?
No.
I'm going to look to the applicant. Any problems with that on the applicants? All right. So since there's not a representative on behalf of, and this isn't an appeal where I have a specific representative on behalf of the opposition, then that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to keep the record open until August 20th, 4 p.m. new evidence. And I'm going to talk about how you get everything here in just a sec. And August 27th, 4 p.m., applicant rebuttal. All right. So what does that mean? It means that if you wish to submit something to me in writing that you forgot to, that you've had second thoughts. And I'm picking on Ms. Byrne again only because I think you're a good person who takes my comments the right way, I hope. Maybe not, but I hope. And so I'm just using you as my sort of joust on this, and that means that you may have thought of something that I, because of something that I said that you disagree with. And you go and look at the code, or you look at the regulations, or you look somewhere where I have authority to look, the law, and you say, you know, Mr. Hearings Officer, respect what you said at the hearing, but you're wrong for the following reasons. And I need those reasons. Okay, I need those reasons. So new evidence means you can submit anything, and I don't think there's any question nor need to take any questions on that. You want to submit something to me, you submit it to me in the next 7 days. How do you get it to me? Three ways. Not particularly handy, but three ways, all right? And 15th isn't that far away. It's not like you're clear out in Powellhurst or wherever. So you have the right to hand deliver it. If you hand delivered it, maybe Ms. Byrne, that's not convenient for you with your site and all that, but if you can get somebody else to deliver it, that's my recommended way for everyone here, is it's hand delivered. You go out this door, you take a left, there's a very imposing looking glass window. A clerk will be behind that glass window during open hours, and you simply hand it to him. And that clerk will stamp it. Whatever that timestamp says, rules. What I usually get is a whole bunch of engineers, and the engineers want to tell me how clocks work and chronometers work and everything else works. I don't care how they work. I know what my timestamp does, and when it's stamped, it's stamped. So I said the time limit was 4 o'clock. If it's timestamped at 4:01, late homework. Late homework doesn't get graded, it doesn't get considered, it doesn't get read. What I affectionately do with it is I put it in the infamous brown envelope and I don't consider it. Harsh? You better believe it. Very, very harsh. So what does that mean? Get it here an hour or two early before the 4 o'clock deadline. Honestly, I mean, I'm forewarning you. I'm trying to give you every advantage. Get it here. Put your hand down, please. All right. So secondly, you may fax it to us. There's some cards back by the door where you walked in. You may fax it to us. Somebody your age? You know, know what a fax is. I mean, young people seem not to know what faxes are. But we still use a fax. Our fax stamps what time it's received. I don't know how it works. Not going to explain how it works. Don't care. But whatever time it stamps on there is the time it's received. If you are going to fax it at least 10 to 15 minutes early, and then the card has our phone number, call us up and say, did you get my fax? And the clerk will tell you, got it, and it's stamped 4:25 or 4:29, it's timely, it's good. Or worse comes to worst, 4:35, and it's not timely. And it goes in the brown envelope. Finally, you may mail it. The time period here is pretty short. In the 18 years that I've been around this particular office, I have yet to figure out how our mail system works. What I do understand is when my clerk opens your envelope, pulls out whatever you've got in it and stamps it, that's the time it's received. Lawyers are the worst at this. For some reason, they have a perverted sense of what the mailbox rule was in contract law. It's not that, but I will tell you that time received is what time we receive it. I've had some people say, well, I'm going to take it to the post office, and they're going to certify it. So they have a time on it? No. It's what time we get it and stamp it. So, three ways. Hand deliver, safest. Best be here at least 5 to 10 minutes in advance. Fax it 5 to 10 minutes in advance at least. Mail it. I'd say mail it at least 3 or 4 days in advance because I don't know where it goes in this system. But all I care about is when it gets to this office. You do not submit anything to the staff. You do not necessarily have to submit it to the applicant or any opposition. If you want to be courteous and submit things to other people, that's nice, but it only counts. I'm ultimately going to be making the decision in this case. And my decision is what's theoretically appealable to City Council, so you need to get me the information, right? I'm going to reemphasize one last time. My decision is based on relevant laws, rules, or the approval criteria. What might happen, what did happen before the application, what is not in the application, the applicant is in control of what they put in their application. Staff is obligated to make a decision based on that application, up or down. I'm obligated to make a decision based on the staff report and what that application had in it. Not what you want in it, not what could have been in it, but what is in it. All right? Any questions on getting information to me now? Now, if you want to raise your hand, you're more than welcome to.
What's the actual date?
The date, August 20th. That's next Monday. August 20th is the open evidence period, which would relate, Ms. Byrne, to you. Okay? Yes, sir?
So, not referring to this, but referring to your date of when this is going to be done by.
Good question. Actually, good question.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of unfair because me, as a person that lives around there, I did not receive any notification of any sort that this stuff was going on unless I saw that sign that was on that lawn. Nobody in my building got that.
Okay. Let me tell you two things, and this is going to sound really harsh, but you showed up, and it's over. You're here, and you now have notice. Okay, that sounds harsh and uncaring, but that's the facts. All right, secondly is that I'm obligated to keep the record open for the 7 days, and I will do that. You have the obligation and the opportunity to submit whatever it is you want over the next 7 days, and so you may do that. Any other questions on the process, how to get stuff here so that I can read it and make a decision based on it? All right, if not, then we'll close the hearing. I will be issuing a decision within 17 days of the date the record closes. At this point in time, the record is going to be closing on the 27th. That's the final date for the rebuttal. Ms. France, I'm just going to let you know, because you haven't appeared in front of me before. Here's how I deal with requests to close the record early, because on occasion, hearings officers will close the record early. And this doesn't hurt anyone else, it just shortens their time period. If you wish to close the record early, you may submit in writing a request anytime after 4 p.m. August 20th. Anytime after that, you can submit a request and underline, put in italics and bold print request, because I, based on my workload, I'm going to determine whether or not I'm going to close the record early or not. Okay, but I will tell you right now, based on what happened this morning and the cases which are controversial, that I wouldn't mind closing the record early, because I will have a little additional time to get the decision done. But that's not a requirement, nor is it a suggestion or even an obligation on your part. But if you do want the record to close early, please submit a letter to me in the form of a request, and I will either grant or deny that in my ultimate decision. We'll close the record. Thank you for coming.
I'm sorry, I didn't.